Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. All right, so we're going to bring in the big guns today on the program. Andy Bush. Andrew Bush is editor-in-chief of the Bush Update, and he's a regular panelist on CNBC's Money in Motion website for today's program. You can go back and look at what Mr. Bush has done. A lot of things. AndrewBush.com. His latest post is Stocks Go Up as Central Banks Buy. What do you know? We'll talk about that. And his latest appearance on CNBC is Gold Coming Back. Well, that's an interesting concept. So we're going to be talking about those things. But let me first welcome Andy Bush to the program. Welcome, Andy.
Thanks very much. Appreciate having me on.
You're very welcome, and I'm excited to have you. Now, you were just getting your presidential library done, weren't you? Oh, you're not that Bush. I'm sorry.
No, and sadly, I'm not the Bush from St. Louis, because if I was, I'd be like, you know, riding some speedboat out in the middle of the ocean and drinking a lot of good beer.
Okay, well, I hope you still get a chance to have a beer now and then. But let me ask you, I think we're all going to be saying, we're going to wonder about the central banks drinking beer, because I have to ask you, because I was doing a little show prep and going to your website, the AndrewBush.com website. And one of the things that's been going on, and I think this has been going on kind of below the radar and behind the scenes, there's been all this discussion about bond buying by our Fed and central banks like Japan. But what's going on with these central banks buying stocks?
Yeah, that was the interesting aspect that a lot of people don't realize, is that while we think that our own central bank is very aggressive with quantitative easing and buying of treasuries and GSE debt, and they are. They're very aggressive with this. They've expanded their balance sheet from $800 billion back in 2008 to $3.2 trillion today. But the people that are really out on the frontier of craziness when it comes to monetary policy is the Bank of Japan. They have 30 trillion of yen that they dedicate to buying stock ETFs and Japanese REITs. Just as an example of one central bank that's buying stocks. And I think that's one of the stories that I've been writing about that's kind of tied into two themes that were out there. Is really what people don't understand is that the number of, like, U.S. Treasury securities is much smaller than what you think it is. And the other aspect is that due to the central bank buying of stocks, they've depleted the availability of stocks that are available for sale. So, again, central banks are much more aggressive than you realize, and they really add to the updraft in inequities that we've seen since just last fall.
Well, and that's exactly what I was going to kind of put a bracket around that and say, you know, as you talk about the central banks buying bonds, that obviously puts upward pressure on because of the demand, and that is what is keeping yields as low as they are. But by the same token, if they're doing the same thing with stocks, then obviously if there's less stocks out there to buy, dollars chase supply, and if there's less supply or there's more people willing to buy, then the value or the price of that stock ticks up on the market.
That's right. And, you know, if you think about it, there's about $55 trillion of total market value of global stocks that are out there, but it's significantly smaller when you start to look at just the United States, maybe just Japan, and Europe, and even smaller still if these guys are buying, you know, AAA-rated companies. So you start taking out some of that supply, and then the market reacts very differently. I would also add this, that this is important, and clearly what the central banks have been doing, but what I've told clients, you know, over the past 9 months is the biggest change that's occurred in the stock market is the taking away of a third tail event occurring, some crazy thing that's out there, a black swan, call it whatever you want. And the reason why this was taken away was because the European Central Bank took away the potential for the collapse of the Eurozone and the collapse of and the disintegration of the political union and truly the currency union. And that happened last summer when Mario Draghi, the head of the European Central Bank, pledged to do whatever it takes to keep the euro together. And he pledged, I'll do whatever it takes, and believe me, it will be enough. And since that time, you can go back to last summer and look at your chart. The U.S. S&P started to take off from midsummer. Euro stocks stabilized and started to go up. And, of course, the Nikkei started its big march upwards from that moment. But to me, that's what I see as far as global risk being reduced dramatically by the actions of the European Central Bank.
And when risk goes down, all other things being equal, when the perceived risk goes down, prices go up.
That's right. I mean, if you're looking, you know, if you look out in the you look at the global topography for investment, and once you take away this third tail event of not knowing whether Europe's going to survive or whether the currency is going to devalue or so on, you know, then planting investments becomes so much more certain, and investors can feel comfortable about that and then hopefully reap the rewards and benefits of a bumper crop. And I think that's really important.
Excellent. If you're just joining us, Andy Bush is on the line with us, editor-in-chief of the Bush Update, a regular panelist on CNBC's Money and Motion, and the website is andrewbush.com. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
If you had a serious health issue, wouldn't you want a second opinion? Is your financial well-being any different? Make sure your retirement plan is the best it can be for your situation. An independent financial advisor can review key elements like stock market exposure, diversification, and fees. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
So you've been wanting to get a copy of my book. David Holland here telling you about how to get great advice and avoid scams. Well, you can, of course, get that from my website. But if you're out and about and you'd like to take a look at the book, pick it up, hold it in your hand, stop by Inspirations. John Hill's the owner. It's at 162 South Nova Road in Ormond Beach. And tell him that I sent you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Andy Bush is on the line with me, and we're talking about below the radar, so to speak, event or trend that has occurred with regard to central banks buying stocks and not only bonds, but stocks as well. And, you know, it occurred to me, Andy, as you were describing that one of the other events or side effects, I guess is a better way of putting it, the side effects of the banks doing this is that not only does it suck up the supply and it could cause an upward pressure on pricing, and there's also, of course, what you mentioned before about the stabilizing of Europe and whatever it takes policy. But there's also the reality that as the central banks, including Europe and United States or whoever else might do this, as they buy more of the stocks, that leaves less that may then react to market news. In other words, they're not buying these stocks and then doing day trading with it, are they?
Well, I hope not.
Right.
You want, or you would believe that due to the nature of what we call reserve management or currency management by the central banks, that they would be
buy and hold, right?
Yeah, buy and hold, exactly. So,
well, what's interesting about that to me, and maybe I'm sure you've already thought about this, but if they are taking a buy and hold strategy with more and more of what's available in the marketplace, that's leaving less that is then, it's a stabilizing effect, I guess, partly, but it leaves the rest of it could potentially be more volatile. You know what I'm trying to say? On one hand, it's more of a stabilizer, but on the other hand, what's not being done so much as a buy and hold with reserve management, that might bounce around more. So it's an interesting mix of what that could mean.
Yeah, I think it could create more volatility, but it definitely, as I describe it, it's really simple economics 101. If you reduce the supply of something and you hold the demand steady, the price goes up because there's the same demand for less goods, right?
That's exactly right.
If you reduce the supply and the demand actually goes up, the price goes up faster. So, yeah, you're going to have some problems with this in the future. And I think that these central banks, that there's a number of problems with this. Clearly, do we want a government institution owning the private means of production? I don't think so. It leads to bad things happening down the road. Do these institutions start making corporate policy? Do they start to insert themselves in the decision making of these companies?
Right.
And that's one of the things that I think you run into a risk of down the road, and it's disconcerting. I mean, as a free market capitalist guy myself, this doesn't end well, as far as I'm concerned.
No, I think you're right, Andy. I think it's got, of course, some very nice positive effects that are on the front end, but this could be very much like a humongous bowl of ice cream with syrup all over it that is wonderful for the first 15, 20 minutes, but about an hour later, you have a different feeling. And the other part of it you mentioned beyond the exerting of control, but you know, it's awfully difficult for the retail investor to quote unquote, or even in other institutions, quote unquote, to compete with a government of, just use the United States, for example, where the Fed has a limitless checkbook. They can literally create $1 trillion and go on a shopping spree if they wanted to.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure within the mandate or within the rules of what the Federal Reserve is, if it allows them to buy stocks. Maybe under, I forget the name of the section of it, but it basically it's exigent circumstances that allows them to do what they did, for instance, back in 2008.
Okay, so we're not there yet.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
And I don't think the Fed would really consider this at this moment.
But other nations, we are seeing this?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. As I mentioned, the Central Bank of Japan is doing this. But also other groups around the world, such as the Swiss National Bank,
okay.
They're diversifying out of their holdings, and they will be buying stocks as well. So, and then you have other government entities like the China Investment Corp, which is funded by the government of China, buys they're like they are a sovereign wealth fund, so they buy stocks as well.
Well, it's a pretty big deal then, and even if our Federal Reserve is not active, these are some large institutions you're talking about between the Chinese, their centralized department there, as well as Japan. Andy, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. Ladies and gentlemen, Andrew Bush is on the line with us. We'll be right back after this short break.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
And we're back with Andrew Bush. Andy is the editor-in-chief of the Bush Update and a regular panelist on CNBC's Money in Motion. His website is andrewbush.com. I'd like to shift gears, if you don't mind, Andy, because one of the other areas that, of course, is affected by all of this supply and demand is gold. And, of course, gold has been beaten up pretty significantly of late. And, of course, it is what most people agree is a fairly volatile investment or hedge or whatever somebody would like to characterize. What is your take on gold's movement? And, I mean, do you perceive it always being something that's volatile? What you can share with us on this?
Sure. Well, just to give some perspective, I mean, this thing has rallied, I think, on average, and I could be a little bit off on this, but over the last 10 years, it's been up 10% per year. So it's had an amazing run. People have bought gold for a number of different reasons. Recently, I think most people would be looking at gold because of the inflation concerns. Given all the central bank activity as far as cutting interest rates, putting interest rates to zero, and quantitative easing, that massively increases the amount of money that's available out there to chase assets. And generally, that creates inflation overall. That's probably the most driving reason why people have bought gold and drove it up to whatever it was, about 1900. Now, subsequently, it's come off pretty significantly. The reason to me is twofold. First of all, is that equities have actually returned. They've given, tremendous returns just since the last 9 months. And everyone knows gold doesn't really generate a return except in its price movement higher. Stocks can provide dividends in that, you're buying a future stream of earnings, a discounted stream of future earnings. That's what you're trying to do when you buy stocks. I mean, that's where the value comes from, in theory.
Present value of the cash flows, that's exactly what the price is supposed to be.
Right. So I think it's just a shifting out of gold and into these types of, into equities. Gold's fallen significantly, and I think we definitely, once we got below 1500, I think there were a lot of people who Big hedge funds, I won't say if it's Paulson, or, but we know that some of these guys had big positions that they were holding on to and, you know, kept saying that they're going to keep holding on to, and we know that they've got really hurt by this move. My guess was there was some, you know, I hate to use capitulation because that's an overused term, but certainly we have a more technical term in the trading world, and it's called throwing up on your shoes. And I think that's what happened. But I think these guys just took such a loss and had to, you know, barf on their shoes and get out of this position, and that's what they did below 1,500. Now, we've since stabilized. We went down to about 1,340 and rallied back. And that's the thing. You know, I think we'll trade maybe in about a 200-point range here for some time between, you know, 1,350 and about 1,550. And I think that it'll just take some oomph away from gold.
Well, the other thing I think that's interesting, Andy, is not because what you said earlier is, you know, not only does it, the gold not have an actual dividend, if you will, that is a return on its future cash flows. It's all about its value and what somebody's willing to pay, and you get the appreciation or depreciation. But the other thing that you know, that you made a comment about as we talked earlier in the program about the action of central banks, you know, either buying bonds or buying stocks. They're not buying, at least none that I know of, are really loading up on gold. So you have an inflationary impact on the stocks and bonds, and then they're not buying tons of gold, are they?
No, and that's it. You know, to some extent, it is a very simple fact that if you drive the price of something high enough, you reduce the demand. And I think what's happened is that, you know, a lot of people have made a tremendous amount of money over the years in gold, as I mentioned, in the last 10 years. And when you look at it, in 1900, you start looking at other places, you know, to invest because you got to feel that, you know, hey, that something has to be better than just buying gold at this point.
Well, what do you say? I'm going to have to ask you, Andy, because this is so perfect for you to answer. What do you say to those that, and I see it out there with the people, what I call the gold pitchmen, come out on television and I own gold and you should too and all of that, you know, routine.
Yeah.
And I get the emails that say, you know, gold's going to, you know, $20,000 an ounce. I mean, is that just pure fiction of selling gold? And they never seem to come out and say, now you need to sell gold. It's always about, no matter what happens, they say you need to buy more.
Right. You know, you got to be very careful when people make these predictions of like gold 5,000. And then when you ask them, well, what's your time frame? And they say, well, I don't know. Well, that doesn't do you any good as an investor.
I mean, maybe 300 years from now it'll be 5,000, right?
Yeah, or it could be 10 years from now or 5 years. But unless you put a date on it, it really doesn't help anybody who's trying to put together a portfolio. So what I would say is, you know, gold or precious metals have a place in portfolios. There's
very good.
No doubt about it.
Thank
no
you.
Doubt about it.
Thank you. But not. What, but don't go take your whole IRA and put it in gold.
That's right. What percentage, you know, it is a volatile metal, and it is a volatile commodity, and you have to be careful with it. So, I mean, do you put 5%, 10%? You know, 10% on a volatile commodity
a lot.
Is about the max you should put in, I think.
I wouldn't even go that high, but I appreciate your perspective. Andrew Bush is our guest today, ladies and gentlemen, editor-in-chief of the Bush Update, regular panelist on CNBC's Money in Motion. AndrewBush.com is a website. We're going to take one more quick break. We'll be right back.
Sometimes I know what I want to say, but just can't find the words.
Last week, I shouted at my grandson, and I'm not sure why.
I saw my daughter, but couldn't remember her name.
The sooner you recognize the warning signs of Alzheimer's disease, the sooner you can do something about it. To learn more, go to alz.org/10signs. That's alz.org/10signs. A message from the Alzheimer's Association.
Welcome back. Andy Bush is on the line with us. Andy, I want to go back to another thing tied into the action of central banks. And we talked a little bit more about, you know, some of this below the radar that we don't often talk about their actions, China, Japan, buying stocks and other countries as well. But back over on the bond side, what is your take about a long taper, rates going up, things like that for here at home with the Federal Reserve? What are your expectations, or what do you see kind of playing out?
Well, first of all, we all hope, and I mean this quite seriously, we all hope interest rates start to go up. Because if they don't, that means we've got bigger problems. Let me explain. Low rates are not a good thing. They punish savers. And right now, the Federal Reserve is engaged in really hurting people who save their money because they're making interest rates so low that they have no return. Remember, the goal of the Federal Reserve by keeping interest rates as low as possible is to force people out the risk curve, not to buy U.S. Treasury securities, not to buy low-yielding, long-dated securities. It's to make people look at buying stocks and other things like high-yield bonds to get you out the risk curve so that that helps businesses overall. So that's kind of my overview.
Sure.
What I think is that we've got, as far as I'll use the 10-year U.S. Treasury security, we're now right around 1.7-ish on the yield on that. My guess would be the the lowest rate that I think we'll see will happen sometime between the second and third quarter, and it should be somewhere south of 1.5%. Maybe you get a push again back to 1.4%, but I think that'll be the lowest level. And from there, we'll start a climb that I'm not sure where it'll end, but I know that as the economy improves and we get away from the fiscal drag that it's occurring, that's a combination of the tax increases and the sequester that occurs between, the second and third quarter of this year. Then going into the fourth quarter and into next year, I think we'll see a stronger economy and higher interest rates.
That makes sense. And then at that point, the Fed could potentially start to pull back on its bond buying, which has been pushing and keeping those bond yields down in that 1.4, 1.7 range. And also at some point, actually start to raise the standard rates that they set out there. So it could be a combination of things that start to give some upward movement of interest rates maybe over the next, 12 to 24 months?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, it, as the economy normalizes, and, let me just say, don't get me wrong. I'm a big fan of the United States in the sense that this economy is going to do a lot better than Europe and probably do better than China and Japan. And the reason for that is really simple. Number one, housing stabilized. We know this. We've seen it in the housing starts. We've seen it in new home sales. We've seen it in prices. And prices rise to generate more economic growth. Now, so that's the great news about what's going on in housing. And, of course, that creates a wealth effect where people feel more comfortable about their home. They feel more comfortable about spending money. They may also be able to sell their home and then move to a place where they can get a job.
Absolutely. Well, it has a huge compound effect. And Andy, I'm going to have to stop right there. Andrew Bush has been our guest. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd love to talk to him all day if we could. Editor-in-chief of the Bush Update and a regular panelist on CNBC's Money in Motion, andrewbush.com. Andy, we'll have to have you come back another day. Thanks for being on the program.
My pleasure.
All right. Have a good one.
Thanks.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland, and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.